Okay, this is the Netherland Fire Protection District Board of Directors regular meeting on February the 16th, 2022. This meeting is being recorded. Start with roll call. Ian Owen Powell, I am present. Todd Weisler.
Present.
Guy Fawcetti.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Present.
Jess McLevane.
Present.
Russ Panerton.
Present.
And Chief Scott.
Present.
Okay, so we have full board, so we have a quorum, and I call this meeting to order 1902. No changes to the agenda that I posted on Sunday, other than I added a couple of the minutes that got completed. I'm going to make the motion to approve the meeting agenda.
Second.
And Jess?
Yes.
Todd?
I approve, yes.
And Russ?
Approve.
Okay. In the minutes that I sent out on Sunday, I sent you out one set from December, which we'd already approved. So I dropped them from this list. And Jim finished the January minutes really late today. So I don't know if you all had a chance to have a look at those. But just need to approve the January the 19th and November 17th minutes, if everybody's happy with those.
I actually didn't see the January minutes.
Okay.
Did they come out by email or
didn't came see by
email from Jim?
Came out by email, but it's like 20 to 6. So we can hold on those if you want, if you haven't seen them.
I haven't, but I don't know if you need a unanimous.
I need so unanimous. As long as
I can not abstain.
Fair enough. Anybody else have any objection to approving those two sets of minutes?
No, they look good to me.
Okay.
They look good to me.
All right, so I'll make the motion to approve January 19th and November 17th minutes then.
Second.
And Jess?
Approve.
And Russ?
Approve.
Okay, and Todd, for the record.
Yeah, I'll have to abstain.
Okay. I know we do have some members of the public on the meeting this evening. If there's any public statements, comments, or questions, please make them now. There's also opportunity at the end if you have any comments on business that we go through this evening. Okay, we'll move on to the Treasurer's Report. Give me one second. Oh, hang on. So I made this all from my laptop with one monitor, which is challenging. I think it's easy to say.
Okay. So, our total funds, okay, yeah, thanks. Yeah, our total funds right now are sitting at 366K. Our reserves have not changed from last month. They're sitting at 203,000 And you can see the breakdown of reserves. I won't go through each of those since they haven't changed. We have a significant amount of wildland receivable funds outstanding. And of course, those are somewhat offset by what we have as far as payables for the wildland deployments. We do have some fire inspection receivables of $500. And expenses not paid of around $74K. So those are in the accounts payable. And so basically 366 minus the 203 plus the 39 minus the 74 will give us approximately $128K of unreserved funds. And if we look at where we were last year, we were fairly close, a little bit better this year. Total funds last year, 306,000.
I can pull that up.
Reserve was sitting at 100. Oh, okay. I do have it just listed right there if you want to look at it.
Oh, is it just on the next
listed
one?
Right next to that.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's just, it's listed as text next to the this month's fund balance.
Oh, I get you. Go.
Yeah, I pulled it from last year's financial report. And then I just wanted to point out that we should expect our first big tax revenue influx in March. And last year was around 250,000. So March is just around the corner. So anyway, unless there's questions, we can move on to income, which is really, there's really not much income this time of year. Any questions? Okay, let's, Ian. Okay, thank you. So yeah, income, we didn't get any tax revenue yet. We did receive some donations and some grant income, a small amount. But these would not be considered budgeted income. This is what we would term, you know, non-budget or below the line items. Any questions on our income?
No, this
okay.
Month.
Okay. let's move on to expense then. For our expenses, you know, we've had... what I did this year was I, instead of just evenly breaking out our total annual expense over 12 months, I did show the pension funding that we have to do around the October time period. So that's why we see a larger expense in October. And so the evenly distributed expenses are gonna, should be a little bit more, closer to realistic. And so for this month, we are a little overspent if we compare it to the evenly distributed expenses over 12 months. And that was mainly because, you know, we had some payout to Charlie for his acting chief role. We had some vehicle repairs. We had some training expense. And also there was some additional software expense this year as well. I didn't put that, I didn't note that, but there was additional software expense as well. So I don't think that this is, you know, alarming, but we'll just keep watching it month to month. Any questions?
No, but I'll just add something that also in that spend, we've been doing a lot of technical upgrades in sort of the infrastructure, computing infrastructure. So that's kind of, I think we've probably put about 5,000 or 6,000 into that this month or last in January, just so that we can get that done and get that moving because that needed to be done. So that also shows here.
Was that put under software? Because that was sitting at like $8,000.
Might have gone under software. Yeah, I'll go and have a look at how that was categorized because it needs to be specifically categorized because there was specific budget for that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And then just in summary wise.
Hey, Todd, just a quick question or a comment is that what I remember is that we had expected that software expense to come up this fiscal year. So, you know, what you were saying is that we are now committing the expenses and it's a little more, but or than what we were doing last year, but we were expecting to do that, correct?
Well, actually, you know, if you look at the specific category of software, we only had $1,800 budgeted, but we did have the ESO contract in at $15K. I don't know if, you know, these upgrades, you know, in our networking were necessarily accounted for in our last budget. So we have to take a look at that.
Okay. So, yeah, software has a way of kind of getting out of control. Okay. Thank you.
So I think a little bit of cross purposes here. So the software expense is probably image trend, and there's some additional hardware expenses. There was a separate line item in the budget, so I'll work with Kathy to get those properly categorized.
Okay, cool. Okay, there was $5,000 under communications equipment. Is that kind of where you were budgeting it, Ian?
No, it should have been under office equipment.
Okay. Anyway, we can take that offline.
Yeah.
So our budgeted monthly spend is about almost 17,000 higher than last year, and it's mostly administrative costs. We also had, these are just some items I wanted to point out for our budget for this year and as compared to last year. For this year, we have planned 40K in vehicle maintenance. Last year, we ran about 46.6K. I think that's going to be a good number. And, of course, I don't really see anything we have to change at this time. We're early in the year. We're pretty much close to where we were last year, and we executed our budget really well last year. So I think we're off to a reasonable start. Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Do we have to approve this at all? Or is it, okay.
It's basically just treasurer's report for us. So nothing to approve there. Okay. Next agenda item would be chief's report. Give me a second. Okay, Chief, take it away.
Okay.
Just checking that you can actually see the Chief's report on sharing on my screen.
Mine is kind of distorted right now with the finance report. I don't know if anyone else's is.
I got the distorted finance report too.
Me too.
Yeah,
I'm here. Yeah, I've downloaded a copy though, so I have it in front of me.
Give me a second. I'll just restart that screen share. Yeah, it should be better now.
Better.
Yeah, okay. It's a lot better now. Okay. Thank you, Ian. Appreciate it. Hello, everyone. Thanks again for all the support with my mom passing. I know it was a challenge for me to leave for those 5 days, but she is at rest now. So thanks again for all the support from the board and the membership and the entire community when it came to that. So thanks again. When it comes to my report, I know it's a bit lengthy compared to what you're used to getting. So if there's anything you want me to change or anything that if it's too much information, then just let me know. I just put it in that format to inform all you on the processes and what we're doing, just in case there wasn't enough information coming out. It kind of laid out each one of our areas of expertise within the operation portion, as well as some of the administration stuff. So please let me know if that's too much information, and in the future, it won't be 4 pages. I guarantee it. So unless if there's some information that needs to be relayed. So my apologies on that. But before I touch on a few things, does anyone have any questions on the general report? Okay, it looks like there isn't any questions. I know that we have some stuff still under old business, so I'll be sure to address that when we get there. When it comes to the follow-up, I'll start there. The county chiefs had a meeting when it came to the EMS system. We also, AMR was there at the meeting. Chris Williams discussed how in the future they're planning on keeping the EMS contract, but looking to see what Boulder, the city of Boulder does with their EMS contract kind of dictates on how the county looks. They did state that they have renewed their yearly, and they, right now they have 5 contracts in this area. That's including Longmont. And what the county chiefs are starting to prepare for or start to make a strategic plan for is if they do go away. So during our meeting, we discussed, do we look at possibly transporting our own? Do we look at possibly having an ALS provider for our area? And we're talking all of the areas for the mountain districts, all the way from Boulder Rural to Lyons. And so when all the chiefs got together, pretty much the sums up the meeting is we have to start preparing for either one of those capabilities, if not both, as well as what does the future look like for EMS transport for the mountain agencies. And a lot of concerns with different organizations on how do we plan for that in the future, as well as resources needed to try to help our communities in that way. So we decided that we're going to have a standing meeting at least once a month to start preparing for that. But as of right now, the AMR contract is intact within the county itself. They are looking to see what that future looks for. Boulder, the city of Boulder Fire Department is a little, probably 1 or 2 years out from doing that. I know that they just hired, or they're starting to hire, an EMS coordinator to try to build that program with AMR. And I know that the Mountain Chiefs were looking at possibly leaning on AMR to help build a program for the county as well. So I'll definitely keep you all posted when it comes to that EMS service contract, when it comes to the county request for solutions. Does anyone have any questions on that? Or okay,
moving forward. Chief Scott, you don't know when a decision has to be made yet. Is that what you said?
Yes. As of right now, we're still under contract, and they're using it year by year extensions. So each year they'll re-sign that contract. Usually it's a 5-year contract, but they're going year by year now because the AMR operation depends on the city of Boulder and the city of Longmont. And although they tell us that the mountain communities are very important to their organization, I know that they depend on those cities for transports as well. So if those, for some reason, those cities go away, then the mountain service might look different. without the county commissioners having their voice in that yet, as if they were going to look for another company like Falk or one of the other privates to cover the county. We have not heard any information from the commissioners when it comes to the future planning. As of right now, they're just depending on AMR for that overall EMS service contract.
And the contract ends on the calendar year?
Well, they just re-signed it, and it's kind of unique. This one, or not too long ago, I'm sorry, about 6 months ago. This one is out for a request, and it should be re-signed in June, or the end of June or early July to recreate that whole year.
Okay.
But they would have to also give us a notice if for some reason they're going to stop service or something of that nature. They would have to notify all the agencies, and they would also have to give us a certain day grace period to try to prepare for that. Because right now, the only out of all of the mountain departments, the only one that's somewhat doing some transports is Boulder Rural, and they just now got into that, and they're still using AMR as the backup.
Okay, thank you.
Another follow-up was on the command vehicle financing available, but it's also under old business. So would you prefer me to just address that under old business? Okay.
Yeah, let's do that under old business.
Okay, sounds good. Other updates, we submitted for the reimbursement for the EMTS grant for the Lucas that was purchased. So hopefully we'll be getting about $7,300 back from it. We also applied for the AFG grant with great help from Larissa. We couldn't have done it without her. And so we're going to try to replace that compressor as we discussed in the report itself. 5601 is back in service. We did put the new hose on and starting to make some slight modifications to make that call ready, as well as 5617 is back. There are some things that, I mean, it's in service, but we did notice that the tires are, you know, cupping and there's no traction and it's missing some ladders and stuff of that nature. But we are making a plan to get that thing back to NFPA compliancy compared to just having a ladder and just using the big 50-foot. We need some more ladders to add to it. So we're building our plan there. Ambulance 56, 21, and 22 both are completed the yearly inspection and licensing. And then we ran into a little trouble with 56, 20, and it did not pass the inspection because the braking system. The mechanic said it is underpowered. And for us to put that ambulance back in service, we'd have to address the braking system itself. Right now, Charlie has reached out to a off-road company in Boulder that I guess to outfit those lifted vehicles, you have to have a special braking system. And he's looking to get a quote and see how much that's going to cost. And then we're going to have to decide as an organization if we put that back in service or just take it completely out of service and possibly put it up for purchase. Roughly, and just to give you a little heads up, Charlie says, to do a whole braking system, sometimes it costs like 10 grand. So I don't know. I guess we'll wait on the quote to have that discussion. As well as our operational and wildland, there's our overall operational plan we're moving forward with, especially with some of the SOGs, like the report says, we implemented about 22 of those so far. And those are our roadmaps to how we perform and do our jobs. So we're looking forward to keep moving those forward. We have a lot of work to do when it comes to those SOGs.
Chief Scott?
Yes.
I'm sorry, can I interrupt you on this real quick?
Sure.
So I think I was reading on one of the Slack channels that initially you had a voluntary like review of the SOGs and that wasn't going so well. And now you've set up training sessions. With those SOGs, have you assigned expert experts for each SOG, and those are the only folks allowed to do training of people? And have the SOGs been pressure tested with new recruits to find out where they might lack information or, might need a little bit more refinement?
Yes and yes. Well, a little bit anyways. Those SOGs were all written prior to my arrival. So from what they have told me, that it was a committee-based SOGs. Several folks wrote different SOGs. It wasn't just the captains or staff writing SOGs. It was some of the members writing SOGs. And then they vetted those as well through the membership. And then they vetted them again. And then a part of this SOG training is also re-vetting them as well. See if there's anything that is missing from those SOGs, or if we need to edit any of those SOGs themselves. With just, 22 SOGs, that's a very small amount for an organization, which is okay. But like, there is certain stuff that truly the SOG's been written, and then it's been vetted by the membership, and then came back and we had to change that. For an example, the response SOG with the rolling stock. As it's written right now, 20 is one of our primary for backcountry rescue ambulances and stuff like that. Says it in the SOG, but it's out of service. So we're gonna have to change things of that nature, as in, the standing operation guidelines are a living document. So I told the some of the members and staff, once we're completed with our entire SOG book, then it's time to start all over and start to see where we're at, what needs to be changed, as well as we need all levels in there. So from the basic recruit all the way up to the experienced person needs to have their input when it comes to those SOGs. But that being said, is I could ask the captains if they specifically went to the recruits and address that. But I know that I've been at the SOG trainings that I attended, there has been recruits in the room being a part of that training as well. What it's kind of unique how they dispatched it out was I went to the one that Connor and Andrew Jocelyn did. I know that Kyle and Patrick also did one on that Saturday, and then the next one will be the next group, because we're glad Charlie's on vacation, finally a break, right? So but that being said, is they teach one and then they break the room up into groups, and each group gets one or two SOGs, and then each person teaches the SOG themselves to the group. So it's not really just one person teaching the SOG, it's the whole group teaching each other the SOG. So I don't know if that helps a little bit or not.
It answers the question. It gives me concern, but yeah, in standard, you should have, in personal opinion, it's like, you should have one standard or a few standard trainers per SOG who are experts in that SOG, so you don't miss key details that a less experienced person could potentially miss. So we'll see how it plays out. And like you said, it's a living document, and we'll see how it goes.
Right. And I guess I kind of maybe I didn't explain that well. We don't have non-subject matter experts writing SOGs at all. There's those SOGs is coming from the experienced person, like you stated. That being said, is a lot of that SOG work has came from other groups, like for example, a South Metro, or even an Evergreen, or like other organizations. They would take that SOG and get that format and see if that works, and then they would take it to the group. But I think with 22 SOGs, there's not really been any specific ones that have been, like, I would say that, like, for example, Lindsay is one of our water rescue subject matter experts. She completed that SOG and then taught the SOG. So I think we're kind of there, but not as much as we possibly should be, Jess. So I'll be sure to reiterate that we do want those subject matter experts within our organization being a part of that. But I noted on the 22 that we have completed that they came from other organizations. It wasn't just our folks, you know, creating those. So
I'll just jump in for a second. So this has been a source of much frustration for many, many years, the lack of standard operating guidelines. And the way that we presented an approach to it about 3 years ago now, was that we should take our in-house expertise and use that to produce the operating guidelines. And a lot of that was to ensure that you get buy-in from all of the key players, because we have a lot of people who have between sort of between 5 to 20 years experience, and they all have slightly different ways of doing things because it depends on who trained them or specific situations they've been in. And that was part of the problem. So we need all of that input in there to make sure that we're all going to play on the same page. So it's kind of a little bit of an experiment, and I agree, maybe a little bit unconventional. But in the kind of land of, you know, in the land of fire, not having SOGs is pretty much unheard of now. It shouldn't even be a thing. So I'm personally just really pleased that we've started this process and we're moving forward. I'd like to see how it evolves over time.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And yes, that's definitely how that thing continues to grow. So thank you both for the input, and we'll definitely ensure that does happen in the future. When it comes to training, we've completed the image change training as well as planning for the vectors. Hopefully in March we can get that done, as well as we had the communication training and the navigation training. So still moving forward with our training regimen, as well as we have some big trainings coming up that we would like to be sure that some of our neighbors come as well. One good system that we are implemented should be implemented by tomorrow once the accountability boards are complete, but we've implemented an accountability system, if you will. They are accountability tags that go on a PAR board, and it keeps us in line with not only the standards, but also the accountability of our members, which is very important when it comes to safety, comes to continuity of care, as well as continuity of the emergency procedures themselves. So the accountability phase is something that we wanted to move forward with, and we were able to purchase those tags and add everyone's name and put those on their helmets. And then tomorrow we'll be able to add Velcro to all the apparatus and complete the accountability board. So that was super important. When it comes to EMS.
Chief Scott, I was just wondering, does that by chance, like say for instance, you're on a call and somebody shows up, and is that a pretty clear visual saying this person is capable of XYZ on the call?
No, that all that should happen prior to the call. From the company officer themselves. The accountability board and the accountability system is designed for more larger scenes where, like, we have these two people working here doing this. We have these two people working here or this apparatus doing this. Then we also have this apparatus with these folks doing that. So it's more just an order board, if you will. It doesn't do anything with qualifications or anything of that nature. That being said, is we do have a board here in the station that does address that. I know it needs to be updated, but the officer on scene or the IC or the officer on the apparatus should know that level of personnel that they are working with. If they're a recruit, if they are, and we also have different color helmets when it comes to those, as well as our tags. our tags are different colors. So like the officers have a certain colors, the firefighters have a certain color, and then the recruits have a certain colors. And when it comes down to the recruits' colors, there is a external firefighter and an internal firefighter tag as well. So if you are external only and you do not go in and you are, which we're, you know, about to have that academy coming up, then we'll be able to tell by those tag colors your level. But it truly doesn't, it tells you what level it is, but it doesn't really know. You got to know the person knows that expertise. You know, I mean, I might think I'm a subject matter expert in this, and the next person might think, no, you're not. So I think it's that communication, as well as those accountability tags, as well as our training records, should get us all in line of where folks are at when it comes to their level of expertise. But I also feel that that conversation needs to happen before. We don't want to put anyone in a unsafe act or manner. So I think before any of that training needs to transpire, they need to have that conversation with the incident commander or the company officer.
Okay. Well, thanks. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're addressing that. That's great.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. EMS, and let me know if I'm going too quick. I know I have a big report here. So EMS, our new medical direction is on, had a great meeting with Dr. Sovendahl. All of our waivers are intact. We're moving forward with that. And the EMT application to start our own program should be submitted by tomorrow morning. So we've been working on that. The draft is complete, and Connor's actually working on it right now as we speak to hopefully get that turned in tomorrow. So we'll be able to eventually teach our own EMT classes. But one other thing is we want to get our training group back together through the state so we can give CEs for all of our EMS training. I know we have AMR come in and they help with that, but we also used to have it here being a training group, and we want to re-implement the training group stuff as well so we can get our own CEs for EMS. The fire marshal report, it is as it stands. Rick is at a class, so going through, still planning the frozen dead guy days. We're gonna next week meet with the new town marshal, Jen, and start to move forward with our overall plans with that. Rick said that we're going to have less law enforcement this year due to the payment and contract. So they are willing to pay for extra personnel for a BLS ambulance to be on standby, as well as an extra captain that day. So we will definitely bring you all the final plan whenever we get that nailed down, but it is still in works right now, as well as we're going to in the next, I know we have a lot on our plate, but we're going to update the CWPP, starting to get that documentation together. I think the last time it was done was 08. So definitely want to work with updating that, as well as we're working with the town on this mitigation grant through a group called TEAMS. And we're hoping that we can get some mitigation efforts coming this spring and as well as the summertime, if personnel are available to help mitigate some of those big hazards within our community. So that's something else that we're looking forward to working on as well. Other than that, I think I hit a big chunk of it. If anyone doesn't have any questions, our last page is our calls for the month, as well as our year to date. So. And once again, please let me know if that's too much information. I don't know if how well informed you would like to be.
I think that was great.
I do too.
Great too.
I like that level of detail.
Yep. Just a couple of additions from me, flesh something out a little bit. I'm really excited about the EMT EMS application going through. I think that's just going to be such a good thing for us. So that'd make us like a regional training center. We can run our own EMT classes, both internally and offer that externally. I believe the plan at the moment is to run it internally. We put 8 people who we all need to get to be EMTs. So they're going to be the test subjects for that. And then I know we've been talking to our neighbors about their interest, and we've got some good interest back from outside as well. So moving forward, that's going to be amazing.
There was one other thing that I forgot to mention too. Sorry, Ian.
Jeffrey.
We currently have a hole in the roof, and it's over Bill's office. And so we have opened it up. We've had some contractors come out and take a look. We have stopped the leak with one of the contractors, put some caulking in there. So I'll come back next month and talk more about once we know prices and things like that. But it was leaking pretty good from the ice buildup, had an ice dam on it. And then there's actually holes in that portion of the roof, as well as one of the contractors said it when it was built, it wasn't the sheet metal is not slid under the part of the roof. And so they were talking about maybe that might be some of the challenges as well, but I'll definitely keep the board posted. Sorry for the interruption, Ian.
How old is the roof?
22 years, 23, no, about 22 years, 20 years.
All right. It was
finished in 2004. I believe.
18 years?
So 18 years. 18 years.
Okay.
It's been a long time.
Chief Scott, I have a question. You mentioned at the end of the report you have the stats for the month that you reported, and then you broke it down EMS and fire for the month.
Jim
used to do at least what I saw, a very manual process, and then would send out a spreadsheet of this stuff. And I think he said the last one he sent was the last one. And then that you guys were transitioning over to a new service to track it. And then where I was going with this is this the level of detail that we would expect from the new system and reporting and, you know, just EMS and fire, or is there more level of detail more level of detail associated with that?
To be honest with you, Gee, I can't answer that question. The reason that I did it is because Jim couldn't pull the report, and the new software, no one's been trained on how to pull that report yet. Okay. So I would imagine that the detail should be greater whenever the training is complete when it comes to pulling that report. I know Jim's report is very detailed. Even when I saw his report, I think it's great. I would like to continue it myself, but pulling the data might be a little difficult for him because they were before pulling it by hand in the book, and then now they're pulling it through the software. But I'll definitely follow up and see if we can get more detail for sure, because I made this right off his report. And so that's the only reason I did it. I was like, the board should know some type of call volume or some type of, you know, breakdown. So I'll definitely see if I can get more detail for you.
I want to concur, say this is great, going with the new system, you know, you got to learn that, and then how we might use it going forward would be interesting, at least for me. I always a data person, so it really just shows how we're spending effort and how we might be able to spend resources later. So thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Go ahead, Ian.
I can talk to that a little bit. So there is a reporting function in ImageTrend. We haven't had much time to play with it, but it should be able to produce some pretty detailed reporting with pictures and everything. That's the plan, anyway, once we get into it.
And do you know, Ian, if you know, if one of the metrics that we were always striving for previously was, you know, the number of personnel responding to calls, what the level of training was of those personnel, and so on and so forth. And you know if that software will be able to track things like that?
I've got to keep all these straight in my head. I believe so, because I think we track all the certs in ImageTrend as well. So yeah, we'll be able to get a lot more in-depth detail in all of that information. Cool. And make that available in a much easier format as well. Something that you could just look at and drill into, hopefully.
Excellent.
That'd be my plan. Still need to play with it and see what it gives us back.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see the level of detail the report can spit out.
Yeah, I mean, for the nerds in the room, it's an SQL database, so we can pull out whatever we like at the end of the day and then present it however we want to. We just need to work on doing that.
But then I guess it depends on what level of detail we input.
Yeah, it does. And that's fairly high. So obviously what we're trying to do is get good detail in there so that we can get good stats out and understand what we're doing, who's doing it, and if we're lacking somewhere. So, yeah, big plans. Lots of things going on at the moment. Okay. Any other questions on Chief's report? Okay, so moving on. Oh, sorry, there was one other thing on there that just needs comment. The sprinkler system quote. Syntas, who were doing that for us, changed the quote so it came in under 10,000. So I signed off on that. Today they were working on the system and discovered, as I think we're going to find a lot of discoveries, that the diameter of the sprinkler pipes in the attic space were larger than they'd anticipated. So they'll need more antifreeze for it. So it's gone over 10,000, but I think that was an expectation anyway, that we were going to have some remediation to do in that system. So I'll keep you up to date. I asked Rick to keep me up to date. I'll make sure that we track that and make sure it doesn't go out of hand. But I'll keep you updated on what's going on there.
With the sprinkler system repair, where was that in the budget?
It isn't. It was never a line item in the budget. That came up pretty much at the end of last year after we'd presented and finalized the budget. So that would really come under.
We didn't have like a general category of like station maintenance or this thing was built on Monday mornings and Friday afternoons and we're finding all the contractor errors and.
Well,
there is a.
So we do have a line item in the budget for building maintenance. So it will be filed under that category. The caveat with this is that it has not been fully maintained since the building was built. So we're playing a little bit of catch up again. So like these sprinkler heads, as a for instance, haven't been tested. And they should be tested, I think, every 10 years. So I have an expectation that we'll have some failures there as well.
So with building maintenance, we now have the sprinkler system repairs. They have to take off sheet metal and place sheathing. What else? So for February.
So you're breaking up a little bit.
And that's only at this station.
But there is all the stations have a maintenance budget. And again, I think on a lot of these things, we're playing catch up.
Yeah, and Ian, you had put in $12,000 for Station 1 building maintenance in the budget. So, you know, I mean, that's good foresight.
Yeah.
I mean, our total building maintenance for the year is $16,000. Okay. You know, that Station 1, Station 2, Station 3. I don't remember us spending anything on Station 1, Station 2 in the last couple of years. So, I mean, realistically, and then there was another category, other, $1,500. So all that together, $16,000, maybe that will cover it.
Yeah, I think certainly within the scope of my expectations. We'll just keep an eye on that as we go through the year. I think, you know, we spend 2 years catching up a lot of vehicle maintenance. And I think this year looks like it's going to be building maintenance. It's never ending, really.
That's right.
Okay, give me a second. Let's pull the agenda back up. Okay, back into the old business command vehicles. That became plural earlier this week. I'm not sure what the status of this is now. I sent you out some example quotes that Chief Scott had pulled up for a new vehicle. And he sent another quote to me yesterday. I believe I shared that, which came in significantly lower priced. So I think the first pass of it, we're coming in around about $80,000. And then the second pass on the vehicle was about $55,000.
Those numbers you just mentioned, that includes all the light and radio additions.
That's right. Yeah, it was all the light bar and everything. The lights and radio package. So we kind of need to make a decision on whether we wish to move forward with either one of those. As Chief Scott said in his justification, that it's very hard to get vehicles at the moment. Despite the commercials that may be promising you can go and buy one, I'm not sure that's entirely true. Certainly if you want it in white, it turns out. Chief, do you have anything to add to this?
No, just like Ian said, the challenges, truly, even going out and trying to buy one is tough in not only our state, but other states as well. It's just the way the economy is right now. It looks like from the chat, Jess didn't receive the Chevy quote. She just got the Dodge one, so I don't know if anyone can send that over to her. But yeah, I think that the way to go would be that Chevrolet for 44. How that lucked out is they have one, and one of the fire departments decided to back out of it due to funding. So they have one of those, and then there's six of those Dodges, and then that's everything we can find in the state. Dodge is not taking orders right now. Ford will open up orders in May, and will go till July with orders, and not sure when Chevy's going to open. And that's all for next year. The folks that I talked to said you could hope to possibly get something by next November or December.
Am I a little more stable with audio?
Yes.
Sounds good.
Okay. My question is, I mean, I saw the quote for the Dodge, and that was spec'd out with a diesel. The Chevy, was that spec'd out with the diesel as well, or?
Yes, it was also a diesel.
Okay. That's running about a $9,000 upgrade. Is that diesel necessary?
I think when we discussed the diesels with staff and with Ian is that we're looking at longevity.
Yeah.
The diesel's going to give you a lot longer lasting vehicle than the gas models.
Something I've noticed too, the difference between the gas and the diesel. The diesel is much, much more efficient on fuel when it sits on scene and idles for hours. The gasoline engines consume a lot more fuel. And I've been on some calls in years past where I was afraid we weren't going to have gas to get back to the station. And I think the diesel would be a much more adequate reserve to let it sit and idle on scene if necessary for a lot of hours. So I thought, while it is a lot of money, and like Chief Scott said too, those engines usually last longer than the gasoline equivalents.
But you usually have higher maintenance costs in your shop rates with your diesel as well.
I can't speak to that.
I'm sorry, what was the question? It kind of cut out.
Your shop rates on your diesel are usually about double it is what it is for a gas mechanic.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I personally drive a diesel truck, and my wife drives a Toyota Highlander, and I haven't really noticed any bigger difference besides the oil change. But I mean, I'm open to whatever you folks would like us to move forward with. It's just that we might, if one of the trucks break down or something like that, it might look a little different, or we'll be putting more money into maintenance.
I would say, you know, what Russ said, I think is, you know, based on experience, sounds pretty key, actually. I did want to add, you know, last year this time as well, we spent $75,000 on a tender. And as I showed in our financials, you know, last year this time we were, you know, in a similar kind of boat. We're a little bit better than we were last year. I think that given that, you know, we probably would be able to fund something like this without, you know, having great concern for it really causing us financial issues. So, and it's a needed piece of equipment based on, I think, what the chief and the team is saying, command vehicle is pretty important. So I'm in favor of this. I think it's what the team's telling us what they need.
So also, I would be very much in favor of financing this rather than doing a full payment upfront, so that it doesn't hit our budget all in 1 year. Mm-hmm. We should be able to.
We can finance.
So there's certain.
I thought that'd be.
I knew we'd get to this.
The department couldn't take on a debt or a loan.
So it has to be a specific kind of financing. And there are organizations that provide financing specifically for special districts and fire departments. Because yes, under state statute, we are not allowed to take on a multi-year financial obligation. Which a regular loan turns up as. You'd have to go back to, you have to get taxpayer approval, issue a bond, or raise money on mill levy. But on a lease finance deal of the type I'm describing, it basically fits within the rules and is allowable. I don't know all the technicalities of why that is so. So yes, we can finance it. We just have to do it in a very specific way. And like I said, there's a couple of vendors that we know of that do that.
Was that the financing that was illustrated in the write-up? Was that this particular financing for special districts, or we have to go out and get that?
Those were not. I think those are just basically there for to give you an idea of what the cost would look like. It's my understanding that the lease financing is very similar. But we need to go to them with a vehicle in mind and say, tell us how much this will cost us. And there's so many variables in it as well. It's like, you know, you can put how much you put down. It's just the same as buying a regular car. So how much you put down, how many years you want to finance it over, and how that best works for you. But the two of the specific ways that the financing works is that from day one, effectively, the department owns the vehicle. And then we are paying back the lease finance. The good things about it is it's designed for special districts. So we can set up when the payment goes out. So we would have it so that the payment doesn't go out every month. You say, we'd like the payment to go out in June. We'll pay once a year because that's when we have our money. If, for instance, property values take a massive downturn and we can no longer afford to finance the vehicle, we can just give it back. And that's part of the deal. And that's how you, and that's basically, I think, how you get around the multi-year financing or the multi-year obligation part of it, is that you can give it back. Depending on the amount of financing, I'll send you this packet out in a second. Depending on the amount you finance, there's also options to skip a year as well sometimes in this deal. Obviously, that increases the financing cost, but it gives you that flexibility. So,
are there any prepayment penalties?
Not usually, no. Well, certainly, the information I read, there was nothing in there about prepayment if you wish to. So you're saying paying the loan off early?
Like say our property taxes, we get more income, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, in a couple of years, and we're like, hey, we can pay it off a year or two early, or we can double up on our payments.
I don't believe so. It would be certainly a question to ask.
I completely understand the need for the Chase vehicle. I like the Chevy better because it saves money and we're scooping up what someone else backed out of, which is going to help us. And then that opens up that interesting discussion about that Boulder County Sheriff's vehicle. If we can save like 10, 15 grand here, we're almost to that Sheriff's vehicle as well. So two vehicles for the price of the original.
I looked at that with 110,000 miles on it. I'd be afraid if we'd be going down the path that we've taken with our other used equipment. And after 5 or 6 years, it ends up costing us more than if we had bought a new vehicle.
So I think that one's a similar situation to our red Commander vehicle that we just ended up spending about $4,000 on, having most of the front end rebuilt. But that vehicle cost us $5,000 2 years ago.
From the picture Rick sent around, that looked like the utility box on that thing wouldn't be nearly as handy as just the shell I envision on the Chevrolet with more room for more gear. So I think that would be... The Chevrolet seemed good. I got a kick out of the Dodge one. There was some $1,000 thing for a chrome package. I was going to have a little indigestion on that. But I did not see anything like that on the Chevrolet quote, although I also did not see a limited slip differential on the Chevrolet truck. And that's something we could really benefit from up here.
True, but I think it is what it is.
I know. It's the truck sitting there, it'd either take it or leave it. So
pretty much, yeah. And just while we're on this subject and we're talking about financing and things, at some point, we've alluded to this in the past, we do need to look at replacing a couple of vehicles. And there is no way we can afford to do that without financing them. So this is a road we're going to go down anyway. So we can look at all the ins and outs of it now and understand the benefits or non-benefits, and we can see, how that would work out for us, because we can also ask for comparative pricing if say we have to replace one of our ambulances, all of them. And we can look at what that's going to cost us as well at the same time.
I guess my concern about the financing is, depending on your terms, it could add significantly to the long-term cost of your vehicle, depending on how long you take it out. Because I know there are places will give you a nice long loan, but you're going to be paying $13,000 in interest, depending on what your rate is.
So on the one I was looking at, you set the terms between 3 and 15 years. 15 is the maximum. On something of this size, I wouldn't be going out as far as 15 for sure. I think the average now for buying vehicles is like a 7-year purchase window. But obviously, it depends how much you're going to pay a month and how that works into our budget. Not how much you want to pay a year, effectively, is what we're looking at.
So the other question is, I'm sorry, Ian.
No, go. I finished. I was starting.
So the other question is, if we're in agreement on the Chevy, but we need to get some ducks in a row about either financing or paying, can we put a deposit down on the Chevy to hold it while we get everything else lined up?
I think that's a follow-up item for Chief Scott. if you'd like to.
I will call Sarah tomorrow and see via her. I told her that we are going to the board meeting and I am going to ask the board of directors how they want to move forward. And she said she'll hold it till then, but I'll contact her tomorrow and see if there's anything that we need to do to hold it or what that looks like moving forward.
Okay.
Hey, Ian, you're talking about the terms or the length of the term, and I would defer to you to do whatever you want, but what I might suggest is to try to get the term that would fit the useful life of the vehicle, which in you mentioned 7 years was financing. And what I hear that is that's how I can afford to get the payment in whatever my budget is. And if we're buying a diesel vehicle, it might have a longer life and stuff. So, you know, maybe a 10-year, finance package might be better just because of the useful life of the vehicle. And then that's just my suggestion, just to try to match it up and the reason I'm saying that is that I think in the next year, we're going to be looking at a lot of vehicles and what we're doing and then how we come up with a plan. And then I'm just saying if we keep on getting hit piecemeal by this vehicle there, we're going to kind of lose sight of the forest and the trees and stuff. So, that's just my suggestion. But I that's it.
Yeah, so we'll get some comparisons for term and see what that looks like as well.
Also, Todd, you were talking about where our reserves were standing. Do we have enough in our reserves it seems like we would have enough in the reserves that we could put down, say, maybe a down payment of $10,000 to help maybe get those terms into a more efficient?
Yeah, what I said basically was last year, this time we were in very similar financial situation. We purchased a $75,000 tender. I think that we probably, or I feel that we are pretty capable of, even if we had to just pay outright, I think we'd be able to do it. But I think from Ian's point of view, if we have good financing or can get some fairly reasonable money through this service for special districts, we'd be kind of crazy not to do that, just to make sure that we're whole and we don't run into any other large dollar issues we have to pay for during this year. That makes sense.
It does. I'm not a huge fan of drawing down cash reserves and finance when you can, if it keeps you in a good place, is okay by me.
Yeah, it's just an easier way for us to spread the load of, you know, what is a fairly large expense.
You know what we could do, Ian, if there isn't any penalty for paying early, we just, you know, set up a financing plan, and then by the end of the year, if we have the funds to just pay it off, we just pay it off, and then not incur any additional interest on this particular vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways you can slice and dice this.
I was going to say, it also depends on the terms. There may be a minor prepayment penalty of, like, say, $200, depending on what it is. And, you know, in the scheme of things, it's, you know, and for that, that's not huge.
Yeah. I just actually sent you all the financing information for a company I was looking at reasonably closely. So you can read those at your leisure. And then, yeah, just so you can see how they describe it.
So do you need a motion, Ian?
I think so. I think we'll just make a motion here to proceed with the purchase of the Chevrolet, was it 2500, the Chief Scott located, and to locate the and look at some financing options for that.
I second.
Todd?
Yes, I agree.
Guy?
Agree.
And Jess?
Agree.
Okay. Super. Okay, Chief, if you want to keep me up to speed and the board up to speed with where we're at with all of that, we can start proceeding with that.
Okay, thank you so much, and thank you, board members. Appreciate it.
No worries. Board member as a reserve policy, I have done nothing on in the last month. So, and the purchasing policy, ditto. The burn building, just a quick update. We are probably 3/4 of the way through disassembling that. It's quite an interestingly built building. So we've basically taken off all the panels, all the interior walls. We had a couple of groups over there for about 3 days doing that. The last part is we have to remove the structural steel frame. So we need a telly lift to do that. So when Charlie gets back from vacation, we'll be organizing that. And then we'll have all the pieces over here. We engaged a structural engineer to draw up the plans for the pad for it to sit on. They're working on that, and that's probably now 3 weeks out. It was about 6 weeks when we engaged them. They'll start work on that. And there were some added complications with the engineering on that. And I can't remember what they were off the top of my head, but there was a reason why we specifically had to go out and get the specific engineer we went to get. So hopefully we'll get those back, and then we'll be able to start moving forward with the town and getting approvals and all the permits so that when it's finally stopped snowing, we can start pouring concrete. But again, it's another very exciting move for the district. So I think we'll probably see, hopefully see that by the end of the year as rebuilt, if we can remember how it goes back together. Because there are a lot of pieces, trust me, and a lot of screws. Anyway, so that's good. That's coming along nicely. Cintas quote we spoke about. Any questions in old business? Okay, in new business. And this is not so new business, but it's just taken a while to get together. So a little bit of background. Last year, we changed the way that we calculate our firefighters' pay. We didn't really have a formal way of doing it or a career structure or a career path that made sense to them. For them to go out and get additional certifications or what their career at Nedfire looked like. So back in September, we adopted a new pay structure, which we implemented in October, that pays them by certifications that we are interested in them having. So for those of you who weren't here for that discussion, I think specifically like Fire Officer 1 was very high on our list. And then things like life fire instructor, things like that. And for each one of those that they get, it changes their pay grading. And that made more sense both to the firefighters and to the board to do that so that we could say, this is how much we value you. And they could also see, oh, if I go and spend, because always when you're doing getting certifications, there's some time of it is the organization's time, and sometimes it turns out to be your time. So there's that future payback for doing that. So the firefighter pay policy was the complicated part of it, surprisingly. If you, I hope you had time to read and absorb the policy that I wrote. I know Jess did because she picked up the one word typo, which is, I was impressed with, by the way, because I must have read that 100 times, never saw it. But basically, at the moment, the way we pay, the way it works out legally, is we work a 24-day pay period, but we pay monthly, and it's just mind-numbingly complex to do all the calculations for it. And in talking to the firefighters and talking to Kathy, everybody was just like, can we just do this so we pay monthly and make it work? So the policy as it's laid out does that. It just pays monthly. It basically encompasses still the 24-day pay period, which we have to do because that's a federal law requirement on hours worked. But it just simplifies everything for everybody. Also, in the way that we are currently paying our firefighters, it disincentivizes them from taking vacation. And I think that's a very bad idea in any organization because of the mandatory overtime that goes into their paychecks. When they take vacation, they lose the overtime. So although it's not a big financial hit, what it means is that they're more inclined to try and do shift swaps, and those then create further problems when vacation time starts stacking up. So all in all, the idea of the pay policy is to, first of all, actually formalize how we, well, it's not formalized, we already have a policy that formalizes how we pay. It's just changing that so that we pay. We say that we're going to pay you, it's like $70,000 a year. And then we just calculate that over 12 months. And if they do any overtime, we add the overtime. And in the policy, with all the calculations needed to calculate their hourly rates so we can calculate overtime as well. And I had a lot of discussions. Excuse me a second. The policy itself was a result of a lot of discussions with the firefighters, and they were in agreement with how it was laid out. It's also been to our attorneys. They provided some insight and feedback, which altered the final policy as well. So it, doing what we intend to do in the pay policy meets all of the regulations as required.
Ian, when you say the firefighters, who's in that set? Is it the just the captains and doesn't include the fire marshal?
Correct. So it's basically anybody that works shifts. So anybody works the 48-96 shift.
Okay.
And I have to say, reading through that document and the justification and how things are working now, I can't imagine the math degree that should be required to make that calculation and keep track of those swaps. So everything that I read, if the lawyers are good with it, it makes sense to me. And if the firefighters, yeah, we don't want poor Charlie not going on vacation ever again. So
no. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, I'll make the motion that we adopt.
The one thing...
Go on, Guy. Stop me mid-sentence.
The only thing I'd say is right now, what we're doing is we're getting... The other thing we approved is we kind of had an incentive to get various certifications and stuff. And quite honestly, I can see why that's just way too complex. Now we're kind of going the other end where everybody is going to be a standard 70,000, and it doesn't really matter what their certifications are, what their level of experience are, or anything like that. And it's really just a base rate and then a number of hours that they're putting in the job.
No, is that two different things.
Okay.
So the rates of pay that we adopted last year, those stay. So whatever that we are paying our firefighters is, so the annual salary, if you like, is based on certifications, as we adopted last year.
Okay.
This is just changing the way that we pay them monthly.
The 70,000 was just an example to show you the math.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Quick question for me: if a firefighter on the last of their shift is on a call, and so they're much more than 48 hours during their shift, those additional hours are just more overtime, time and a half?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically if you work any more than, you're going to make me do this, aren't you? Any more than 182 hours in a 24-day period, anything over that is overtime. A time and a half. And it's slightly different to, you know, the regular 40-hour week, because firefighters work 48-hour shifts generally. They work longer shifts than sort of regular workers do. But the benefits all, the whole policy is really designed to be beneficial to our staff and not to the district, if you know what I mean. So we're not doing anything unpleasant to them to make life better for us. We're just simplifying everything for everybody.
I just had a nitpicky thing, but maybe I'm not quite understanding. It might be a different realm, but and I'm trying to find where it said that, but it said the firefighters were exempt. And I always thought exempt were salary, but the way this is written, it's more kind of oriented towards hourly. So I would assume that they'd be categorized as non-exempt, but it should correct me where my misunderstanding is.
That they are non-exempt.
Yes. Yeah, somewhere in there it said exempt, and I'm trying to find where that was, and I should do a search, I guess.
No, you're correct. I'm correct there.
Okay, thanks. At least I'm not going crazy.
No, thank you for catching that. Yeah, okay. I've corrected that in the policy. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So on that note, then I'd make the motion to adopt the firefighter pay policy as written and amended.
Second.
Todd?
I agree. Looks good.
Russ?
Approve.
And Jess?
Approve.
Okay, thank you all for reading through that and catching the errors in it. I appreciate that. Okay, so we have two resolutions that we need to do for mutual aid agreements. So again, just a little bit of background. We have agreements with multiple agencies, usually our nearest neighbors. So some Timberline and Sugarloaf, we have agreements with that if they have a large fire, we'll go to their fire and we don't charge them any money. And that basically is a two-way street. So we do that for each other. The two agreements we have here are basically one is for our mutual aid agreement with Timberline, just formalizing that. And the other one is for the county. So if there's a large fire in the county, for instance, the Marshall fire, we agree with the county that we will, if they request us to go, we will send equipment as we can. So both of those are effectively already in place. We already do them. We're just formalizing that agreement with both of these. Chief Scott, anything to add to that?
No. The only thing, the Boulder County one is all risk, all hazards one. Same with, I mean, it's like Ian said, we're already kind of doing it already. It's just the formalization of it. And I don't know if Ian explained this to you already. The reason that the document itself, it's 23 pages long, but the true document's only 4.5-5 pages. The rest are all signatures because on the Boulder County side, there's like 30 different agencies that signed that document.
And so, Chief Scott, that's why Exhibit A and Exhibit B were missing, because that would be just too much information, basically.
Yes, and that's I sent the entire thing to Ian, and at first, like when I first received it, that's what I was like. Well, where's the rest of it? Because O'Brien from Left Hand or Formal, I can't remember. I'm still learning the chief. So I was like, well, before we sign anything, we need the entire document. So then when he sent it, I was like, oh, it's all signatures from everyone that's on it. So I apologize, but that's the way it was. And then on the Timberline resolution, the very last part where the board president and myself signed, it gives the what if we want to change anything. That's why there's question marks as from our current resolution that we have. And as of right now, we don't want to change anything, but it gives us the option right before we sign it if we want to pick certain things to change in that when it comes to response levels of that document.
Okay, I don't think that made it so I had to reformat both documents.
Okay, sorry about that. Well, you probably don't see what I sent in then.
Yeah. So in the in both of those documents, I've reformatted them into the resolution format. So it just had the information from the resolution. So I didn't realize I missed off the exhibit parts on, which one was that on? Was that on the county agreement?
Yeah, it was the county agreement. Yeah.
Okay, come here, sorry.
Is there anything substantial in those exhibits that are?
I can't remember. I'm putting it over here. I don't think so. Okay.
And I will say that both the agreements also said that we have the right at any time to pull away from those agreements if we choose to. I believe one has a 30-day notice, and I think one is just at the chief's discretion.
I do have a question, Chief Scott, and this doesn't really have any bearing on the agreement because, you know, Timberline wouldn't really care who in the Netherland Fire Department would make the decision that the resources aren't available. But just from your point of view, in the case of a request for mutual aid, who do you say, would you say a Netherland Fire would be the person that would likely be making a call of that? Would it be the on shift captain or who?
Yes, sir. The call will come in from dispatch first, and then the on shift captain will utilize what resources that are available versus what's not, and then make that decision moving forward, which also gives the opportunity to each organization to, hey, we don't have the resources, we can't come help you. We want to, but you know, so yeah, yes, it'd be the on shift captain.
I have a question.
Thanks.
There was a provision for, I think it was called automatic.
Yes. So the difference between mutual aid and automatic aid is, for an example, mutual aid, you usually have to request or ask for it. So we'd be like, can we get mutual aid from Timberline? Can we get mutual aid from, you know, Sugarloaf? Automatic aid means it's automatically sent right, in the event something happens.
And so I thought that was where Exhibit A might have listed in some situations or the apparatus that might go, because I thought for like a structure fire, Boulder County would typically tone out Ned if it's in our district, and also Timberline, and I don't know if also Sugarloaf, but I know for some things, you know, it's like send everybody, because if it's real, you need everybody right away. And if it takes 15 or 20 minutes to call for mutual aid, that could be the difference between losing a wildfire and actually putting it out. Same thing with a structure fire. So I was curious to see what was in Exhibit A. And like you said, I think it was, Chief Scott, you said it was all hazards, all calls. I forget exactly how you put it. So maybe that automatic one lists the particular things, structure fires, wildland fires, I don't know.
Yeah, give me a second. On the document that I used as my source, that was the one that had all the signature pages dropped and also had Exhibit A missing. But I believe it is. I believe it's just for this type of event, this is what we would like from you.
It's the way things have been working. I just didn't see that in the writing, so I'm being pedantic.
That's fine. I get that.
It's almost like my last name, you know, Paniton, pedantic. I'm an engineer. It comes natural.
I know. That's why I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, just find it.
Because I thought it was a great change when we did, you know, call everybody. We'd rather go home when we weren't needed than come late to the party.
Yeah.
Yes, Russ, I agree as well, and you're 100% correct. That automatic aid and stuff like those fires or stuff is going to go really quick where we need all hands on deck.
Yeah, and, you know, something being a board member and a former volunteer, I want to be careful not to think I know more than I do about operational implications. So Chief Scott, you know, if you ever want to take me aside and say, just, you know, be a good board member and leave the operations entirely to you, I'm happy to do that. And so I
oh, no, you're fine. And Russ, we're all family. So
okay.
Just remember, you, if I'm in trouble, remember to call me Michael. You remember that one?
We need to know your middle name too, don't we, for that?
So in fact, Exhibit A was not on the whole document that I saw, but yeah, reading what it's saying, that it's basically Exhibit A is going to be for a structure fire, we expect an engine, a tender, for a wildland fire, a type 6 and a tender.
Okay.
Generally, that's left to our discretion, or we can ask what they want.
I think, to my mind, it was key that comes out of dispatch. That's where everybody gets tones, you know, at the same time.
Yes, and once the documents are signed, then we'll be taking those to dispatch as well.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay, there it is. So is everybody happy with that? Just trying to get back to the agenda, okay. Any other questions about those two? Okay, I'll make the motion that the district adopt resolution 22-06. Which is the Timberline Fire Mutual Aid Agreement.
Second.
I'll second that.
He wins. Jess?
Approve.
Russ?
Approve.
And then Todd?
I approve.
And I also make the motion that the district adopt resolution 2022-07, the County Mutual Aid Agreement.
Second again.
Oh, Todd, come on. Russ?
Approve.
Jess?
Approve.
And Todd?
I approve.
Finally, I'm going to make the motion that we ratify the settlement agreement as provided by our attorney 2 weeks ago, beginning of the month, for the settlement with Mr. Durr.
Second.
Second. Just wins.
Okay. In that case, Geek?
Second. Yeah, or yes.
And Todd?
I approve.
And Russ?
Approve.
Okay. That was all of the new business that I had. Anybody have any future business? Okay. I'm fairly sure we've got some, but that'll come up in due course. We have no special executive session or conclusions. Any public on the call or any public present at the meeting, if they have any comments, questions, or statements they'd like to make, now is your opportunity. Okay, so my audio switched right in the middle of while I was waiting there. Any other business? from the board.
I just like to make a statement that it's nice to get back into the rhythm of a kind of a normal board meeting.
Well, you mean just once a month?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely second that. Okay, our next meeting is March the 16th at 7 o'clock. Maybe on Zoom, maybe on Teams, we're not sure yet. We'll see how our plan goes this month. So, Guy, did you have something?
Oh, I was just waiting for my motion.
I don't know now. I think it's going to be a race here.
Yeah, you can make adjourn.
Second. Yes.
Approve.
And Russ.
Approve.
And Todd.
Absolutely.
Approve. Okay. Going to adjourn the meeting at 20:42. Thank you all for your time this evening and for reading all the documents. I hope to see you all next month. Stay safe.
All right.
Stay warm.
Yep. Take care, all.
Have a great night, all.
Yep. Bye.
Have a great night.